Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Science with Millennials. Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. All right. Hello. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials, my friends.
Welcome.
Well, today we're going to do the first episode and what I'm thinking is going to be like a series of episodes. I don't know if they're going to be like consecutive. I might do some other cases in between, but it's going to be a series of cases specifically focusing on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in the United States and Canada. It's a huge problem for those of you who aren't aware of it. As of 2016, there were 5,712 cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. The case we're going to cover is in Montana, and in 2019, there was nearly 300 missing Native American girls and women in Montana. Native Americans make up approximately 6.7% of Montana's population, but 26% of its missing people, which is insane.
Yeah, that's a crazy amount.
Yeah, so it's a huge issue. There's lots of podcasts that have covered this case that we're going to talk about today and other cases. There's good documentaries, so if this is something that you're interested in, there's plenty of resources out there for you to learn more. We're gonna try to give our own, you know, take on this case and, you know, just discuss what happened and all of that kind of stuff.
Give our own take, but also just mostly shine a light on what's going on, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, these kind of things need to be talked about, like, that's why when the whole Gabby Petito thing was happening, I just was like, I mean, I want her to be found, but at the same time, like, it's just because she's white and pretty. Like, that's the only reason she has this much attention. And so, yeah, I thought it was really important for us to discuss some of these cases and bring more awareness to them. So let's go ahead and get started. Today we're going to talk about Selena Not Afraid. So her full name is Selena Shelley Faye Not Afraid, but she also went by Selena Bell. And let me just talk a little bit about kind of who she was, and then we'll get into what happened, because what happened is just insane to me. So when Selena disappeared, she was only 16. And she had already had a very, like, tragic, heartbreaking life. The missing and murdered Indigenous women issue was actually one that was very near and dear to her heart, because her sister had been murdered. Basically, her sister was at a party. She was 22 years old. Her name was Tristan Gray, and she was leaving a party where she had been seen arguing with somebody. And she left the party and was walking along the road, and a car hit her and killed her and then just drove away. The case is still has never been solved. There's no suspects have even been named, basically. Even though they had two vehicles of interest seen leaving the scene, and, like, yeah. It just seems like there wasn't a whole ton done, and what was done, you know, wasn't very thorough. But yeah, so basically there was an argument, someone in a car, she started walking and was struck and killed by a hit-and-run driver. The family believes The family has done their own investigation and believes that they know who did it, but they can't get the authorities to act on it at all. Selena also had a twin sister named Zoe. In 2014, her twin Zoe committed suicide at age 11. They said that it was the youngest person in Montana to commit suicide in like decades or something like that. Which, I mean, 11 does sound really, really young. Do you have any insight into that, CJ?
So it is really young, but there is more research being done within the last year about younger people committing suicide, especially through the ages of like 5 to 11. But it's been seen more with males and people of color.
Oh, okay.
But again, there's not that much research done on it yet.
Yeah, apparently they're sure it was a suicide, but apparently she was being bullied at school and in middle school a lot, so.
Yeah, bullying is a huge issue in this country.
Yeah. So, obviously, losing her twin sister really affected Selena. And then in 2017, Selena's brother, Preston Bell, was killed by the police. So, you know, she just had multiple horrific things happen. And so, growing up, she was taught how to survive and, like, how to take care of herself and to be careful. And, you know, she knew the land really well. She was, like, she loved to do things outdoors, like horseback ride and stuff like that. So she wasn't, you know, just like a typical, maybe what you would think of like a typical 16-year-old girl who, if you dropped in the wilderness of Montana, would be like unsure what to do, you know?
Right. She would just like have those skills already and like know what to do then.
Right. That'll come into play in a little bit when we go in more in depth into what actually happened and stuff like that. So I didn't look into this before we started recording, but I decided to look into what happened where her brother was killed by the police. So basically at 11:15 p.m., officers were dispatched to the 100 block of Prickett Lane for a disorderly male. When the officers arrived, he used his flatbed pickup truck to ram the caller's car twice before leaving. The two people involved had previously been in a relationship. No one was injured. The suspect, so her brother, was observed 10 minutes later heading back to the residence. The officer attempted to stop the suspect, who chose not to comply and left the scene heading east. The officers gave chase, but he failed to stop. After 30 seconds, they called the chase off. Officers then learned who the suspect...
You say 30 seconds?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
What in the world?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
That's insane.
Officers learned who the suspect was, that he was intoxicated and possibly armed with a knife. They believed he was heading to a residence on Bunting Street. An officer on South Billings Boulevard then saw the suspect vehicle traveling at a high rate of speed and gave chase. I guess for longer than 30 seconds this time. Basically, they continued to pursue, and the suspect was driving south on the wrong side of the road. Police again terminated the pursuit, which had reached speeds of 60 miles an hour. I don't know why they just keep giving up. The suspect was believed to be heading for his mother's home. At 12:10 a.m., the officers observed the suspect's vehicle parked in a parking spot in a parking lot. The suspect was slumped over the wheel and not obeying commands. Spike strips were placed behind the vehicle's wheels and park patrol vehicles around it. The officers identified themselves and eventually deployed pepper spray into the vehicle with no effect. After about 3 minutes, the suspect woke up. He was then observed reaching into the glove box. Well, I can see where this is going.
Yeah, are you going to be surprised by the results of him reaching in the glove box?
No. The suspect continued to ignore commands and then, without warning, accelerated backwards, striking a patrol car. The vehicle continued across the parking lot until it hit a parked minivan, then accelerated forward and hit the same patrol car, pushing it into another patrol car. Officers on foot had to scatter to avoid being hit. At 12:13, 5 officers, 2 with patrol rifles and 3 using handguns, fired at the vehicle, striking the suspect, hitting him multiple times. It is unknown how many shots were fired and if the suspect had a weapon.
So they're just going ham for no reason.
Well, like, I mean, I get that he's driving dangerously, but, and, like, that he could have, like, killed somebody with his car. But at the same time, at this point, you guys have started and stopped chasing him, like, 4 times. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why is now the time you've decided you need to stop him?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. That's not the case we're talking about today.
That's just background on her brother.
Yeah. So yeah, she had a lot of tragedy, but she knew how to, like, take care of herself, played basketball. She was known as, like, super, you know, kind and fun and, you know, what they describe every 16-year-old who ever goes missing as. I feel like usually when 16-year-olds go missing, they're not like, well, she was a total bitch, so.
She was the best person ever. Here's this generic profile of what she did.
Yeah.
No descript detail about her at all, you know.
On December 31st, 2019, Selena was invited to a house party by Deandra Pittman, and with the intention of drinking alcohol. Pittman says at some point on New Year's Day, she passed out, and when she woke up, Selena was gone. On New Year's Day, Selena was on her way to Hardin with a group of people. She was in a, like, white van with a bunch of people. And the van started having car trouble, so they pulled into a rest stop on I-90. Selena then left the rest stop on foot. The group got the car started and left Selena and one other girl behind. We'll talk about that a little more in a couple minutes. But they just left them at the rest stop. Which is weird.
Also super rude.
Apparently, like, the driver or something had called somebody to come pick them up, I guess. But when the person arrived, they only ended up finding the one girl. And we'll talk about how the one girl was found. So Selena ended up being missing for almost 3 weeks before her body was finally found on January 20th. She was frozen to the ground less than a mile from the rest stop. Death was ruled accidental, and it was ruled that she died of hypothermia. That's the official story. Now let's talk about the weird shit. So, Selena's family insists she was smart and knew how to, like, take care of herself. Like, she knew what to do in like, emergencies, who to go to. Like, she wouldn't have just walked out into a field and, like, laid down in the cold to die. You know, because that's what it looked like happened.
Right, we were just talking about how she had, like, all these survival skills, too.
It's not like she was, like, a survivalist, but, like, she's familiar with the land. She, like, she's not oblivious, you know? She's not, like, a kid who would just, like, go lay in the middle of a field and just, like, let herself die.
I mean, who would do that, like, in general?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what it looked like, too. The way they found her, it literally looked like she had just went and laid down in the middle of a field to die in the cold. But she was less than a mile from the rest stop. So it, like, I don't know what kind of rest stop this was, if it was literally just a pullover or if there was, like, some sort of building. But, like, there was some sort of, like, place she could have gone where people would drive past and, you know, like, from what I, like, read and stuff, it's not like this was, like, it's Montana, so it wasn't, like, urban, but, like, it's not like that road is, like, abandoned usually. But according to the autopsy report, there were no broken bones, no bullet wounds, and no violence to the body. It looked like she had just went and laid down to die in the cold. Selena was a part of the Crow and Nakoa nations, and the family had to push to get literally anything done at all. There was never an Amber Alert released for her. The family had to do almost all of the searching. They camped out at the rest stop and searched the area around it relentlessly. The family insists that if her body had been there from the beginning, they would have found it. Because they searched relentlessly. They used a really cool drone that, like, could pick up even rabbits and mice. It wouldn't have just they wouldn't have just, like, overlooked it. Because it's not like she was, like, hidden, you know?
Right, she was out in the open then.
About the other girl that was left at the rest stop with her. She was found alive, but she was found with scratches on her legs from walking through the, like, brush and barefoot, hiding in a ditch. And she has no memory of what happened. Selena's family says that they've heard, so this is, you know, not, like, verified information, but that they've talked to people who said that they've witnessed Selena being very drunk, trying to get into a car, and then being forced into the white van. There was also, you know, Selena was a 16-year-old, so she had social media and stuff, and she posted a Snapchat on New Year's Day. It's the last Snapchat of her, and it's two men arguing outside of a van that she's sitting in. And that's pretty much all that is in it. Yeah, it's just... Basically, they received very little help from the police. They pretty much had to do all the searching on their own. And it was like pulling teeth to get even in contact with the police, much less get them to do anything about anything. And the police have just ruled this an accident. This year, the, I guess, like, state of Montana did, like, ordered a more thorough investigation, and Deandra Pittman has been charged with endangering the welfare of children on December 23rd of last year, but that's only, like, a misdemeanor charge, and she's just the one that, like, got her drunk the day before. They don't actually... I don't think they think that she had anything to do with her death. They just are trying to, like, I guess charge someone with something so the family feels better. But, like, to me, none of this would make me feel better at all. There's just so many things that are just weird. Like, this girl's not just gonna go lay on the ground and let herself die. And then the other girl that was found, you know, with scratches on her legs and barefoot in a ditch, not remembering anything. It makes me wonder if these girls were kidnapped and were being trafficked and had been drugged or something like that. Because, like, I don't know what else could have happened. But then I also don't know if they were being trafficked, why they would have just left them at the rest stop. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, it could be trafficking or, like, I thought it was friends that were in the van with her. Or was it just two random men?
Well, I mean, they know who was in the van, but it didn't seem like they were, like, good friends of hers or anything.
And they just left them there?
Yeah.
I wonder if they, like, drugged them and then just left them there.
You know. See, I feel like they have to have been drugged, because for the one girl to not remember anything and then, you know, her to just, like, go, you know, just go lay in the middle of a field, I don't get it. But then also, you know, the family insists that, like, she couldn't have just gone and laid there because they would have found her body on, like, the first day.
Right, because it would have been close enough, so she must have been transported somewhere and then brought back.
So yeah, I honestly, I really don't, I don't get it. I just have so many questions, and it feels like the police are really failing Selena and her family.
I agree. I mean, of course all of what we're saying is speculation, but it's good to just point out police blunders, I guess, is the nice way of putting it. Police incompetence.
Well, like, so... There's a documentary where they actually, like, speak with her family pretty extensively, and her family just tells about how hard it was to get the police to do anything when, like, just to get any sort of information from them, or I think they had a, you know, the normal issue of even reporting her missing was really difficult because, you know, they say, oh, you gotta wait this many hours. You don't, that's not a law. I know I say it, like, every time we talk about a case where somebody was reported missing, but I don't know. It's just so... I have way more questions than answers with this case. Because to me, none of it makes sense.
Do you think the police were in on it?
I don't know. I know that in the documentary they talk some about how due to it taking place on a reservation, the jurisdictional issues had some sort of impact on the way the case was handled, because since it's on a reservation, it's handled by tribal police, but they have like little to no resources. And also, you know, when you come to a small town local police office like that, it tends to have a lot higher chances of bias and, oh, well, I know these people, so I'm going to protect them, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But I really don't know. Like, I honestly have no idea, because to me, I guess it makes the most sense that, because I don't know, because part of me is like, well, her body couldn't have been there the whole time. But then it doesn't make sense why they would take her body away and then put it back there. And why the other girl was found there. And if, like, why would they just leave the one girl and then come back and put Selena's body there? Especially if that area was, like, being searched and stuff a lot. But also, like,
was it actually being searched, though, is the question?
Yeah, so her family literally, like, got an RV and parked it there and set up, like, warming tents and was basically living at that rest stop searching the area for weeks.
So they were doing it, not the police.
Right.
Okay.
Well, okay, so the police had, like, a command center there, but they didn't really do any of the searching. It was just volunteers and family and stuff. So I really just don't know at all what to think about this case, but I do know that it shouldn't have been ruled an accidental death and it shouldn't have been ruled non-suspicious, because to me, this case is the definition of fucking suspicious. The people in the van also have told, like, super conflicting stories. Apparently, the driver of the vehicle is the one who had called a relative to pick the girls up. But that's only one version of the story. The driver apparently said that they were worried that the vehicle would stall again, so they called his mom to come pick them up. But that's so weird, because, like, that doesn't make sense to me. The girl said, like, that she saw Selena, like, running towards the trees in the field, but that was, like, all she could remember. The thing that's the biggest red flag to me that makes me appalled that they called this an accident is they found the second girl hiding in a ditch with no shoes and scratches all over her and couldn't remember what happened and were like, oh, well, this isn't suspicious. Like, excuse me?
What do you think about an alien theory?
You think they were abducted by aliens?
That's why I said to take it out, but, you know.
I mean, I definitely think that aliens exist, but I believe that they don't look anything or do anything like what we think they are or do. I don't really think that they're out here, like, zapping people up. But, I mean, this is definitely one of those cases that is weird as fuck enough that I would be like, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just feel like there's, like, details missing that were withheld from the family.
I'm sure there were, but, like, at the same time, why are they being withheld if it was accidental?
Because to me it sounds like a cover-up.
Yeah, you think it's, like, a cover-up by the police?
Yeah. I mean, of course it's speculation. I don't want to be sued for saying that they're covering it up, but, like, you know, allegedly it's a cover-up or something.
Well, I mean, everything in this podcast is our opinions, so we can't be sued for having opinions. I think, we'll see, because, like, one thing that is confusing to me, apparently Selena sometimes used the name Selena Big Hair in some of the sources that I've read, which was also the last name of the sheriff. So I'm like, why? So are they, I have a lot of questions about that. Are they related? If they're related, why would he want to cover it up? I just have a lot of questions.
And those are all the known details about it?
Pretty much. I mean, as far as I could find, they've not released the autopsy report. They've only, like, stated what was in it. So I would be curious, and maybe I'll request that and see if we can get a hold of it. Because I'd really like to look at it, but...
Yeah, because we could always do a follow-up to this, you know, even if we're covering a different case in a similar nature.
So, I don't know. It just seems so weird to me that, like, the police just didn't really do anything.
Yeah, I don't like that.
So, the CDC reported that murder is the third leading cause of death among Indigenous women, and that the rates of violence on reservations can be up to 10 times higher than the national average. So, it's kind of crazy. This is such a huge issue, and like I said, this is going to be kind of a series. I don't think it's going to be sequential. Like, I won't do one again next week probably, but every once in a while we'll do another case from of this series, just because this is something so important to bring awareness to, because I had no idea that this was even an issue until fairly recently, until a couple months ago.
So was the sheriff, like, part of the reservation police, or was it, like...
Yeah, so the sheriff was part of the reservation police, and that's who initially did the investigation. And then, I believe, semi-recently, the state of Montana had their, like, state's attorney do a investigation into it. And they're the ones that press charges on that one woman, Deanne, I think her name was. But they are, I guess, still taking a look, the state's attorney, into her death. But as of right now, her death is still labeled an accidental death.
So was the sheriff, like, Native American as well?
Yeah, yeah. I think they're just saying that it was accidental, like she just froze to death because it was cold. But also, on the day that she went missing, it was 30 degrees. So it was cold, but it wasn't like, I mean, this is Montana. It wasn't like negative 70.
Yeah.
But for those of you not in America, we're using Fahrenheit. So 30 is just below freezing for us. So, like, it was cold, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't like, you know, negative 5 or anything like that. Because, like, at 30 degrees, you know, you can probably survive for at least a little bit of time out in the cold, you know. You're not gonna... And so they said that... The police said, you know, oh, she just froze to death because she wasn't dressed appropriately for the weather or whatever. But reports say she was wearing, like, a black coat, a gray sweater, you know, jeans, and then, like, ankle-high boots or whatever. Which sounds like what I would wear if it was 30 degrees out.
So I also wonder if she got, like, picked up at the rest stop, taken somewhere, and they brought her back. Even if it wasn't, like,
that,
traffic.
I mean, that's definitely a possibility, but, like, why bring her back? That's, to me, that's the biggest thing, because it's very, at least in my knowledge, it's pretty freaking rare for murderers to kill, like, leave a location with somebody, kill them, and then return them to that location. Like, it would make more sense if, you know, they killed her and then returned her to, or, like, dropped her off at a different location.
But wasn't, what if it wasn't, like, a murder and it was unintentional?
Yeah, but I...
Because we haven't gotten the autopsy and there wasn't any, like, you said there wasn't any trauma to the body, right?
Right, according to the police, yeah, no trauma to the body at all. But then, like, how'd she die?
Like, she could have had, like, gone into cardiac arrest or, like, anything like that, or alcohol poisoning, or...
Yeah, but according to the, like, according to what we know, because they would have, so if I don't know about the toxicology, what the toxicology report said, but if there was like a cardiac arrest or like they found alcohol or something like that, the police would have been all over that because they would have been like, see, it was an accident. But the fact that we don't know anything about that makes me feel like they didn't find that. So to me, what that means is she could have been drugged with something that doesn't show up in a normal toxicology screen, which there are substances that don't. Or, you know, I don't know. I can't think of... Or she really did, I guess, just go lay down in the middle of the field and just die. Let herself freeze.
I mean, the drug theory really... Like, the people in the van could have drugged her. And especially since the other girl, like, doesn't remember, but, like, woke up without shoes or anything. You know, they could have, like, wandered off somewhere and then been, like, coming back and been like, oh, this is, like, a safe space. I can lay down here and be fine. You know, but again, they don't or she didn't remember anything, obviously.
Right.
But when they found her body, was she, like, wearing clothes or was she just chilling?
Yeah, no, she was wearing clothes, which is another thing that's kind of surprising because when people die from hypothermia, you feel hot. Like, it's very common for people dying of hypothermia to be found naked or nearly naked because they will take all their clothes off because you're... Like, it's like when you start getting really cold. Like, if you pick up, like, put your hands in the snow, they start to feel, like, almost hot because they're so cold. I don't know. Not that that's a thing that everybody does when they're dying of hypothermia, but, like, as far as I know, she was found with all her clothes on and everything. To me...
Regardless, she was missing and they didn't try very hard to find her. Or, like, try for, not to find her, but, like, to do something about it and figure out what happened to her.
Yeah. I think, to me, the thing that seems most likely to me is some sort of, like, trafficking thing. Just because it was two women who seem like they were both drugged. That were, there's, you know, people saying that they were forced, that at least that Selena was forced into this white van. And I know, like, Indigenous women have a really high chance of being trafficked, I guess, just because, you know, like we've been talking about, they don't get talked about.
Yeah, if it was opposite world, this case would be completely covered up and down, figuring out everything about it.
Oh, yeah, if this was, like, a white girl who was found dead in the middle of a field from hypothermia, everybody would be like, she would never do that, and... This must be foul play. Especially if she was just like, even if she did die of hypothermia and it was accidental, they would be after those people who left her at that rest stop.
Which I think that the same thing should be happening.
I mean, I agree. I think it's ridiculous. I don't understand it. Because, you know... I feel like we've brought the Gabby Petito case up so much, and it's not that we aren't happy that Gabby Petito's body was found and stuff like that, but it just goes to show how different things are in this country when you're white.
I know, we keep saying we don't want to talk about it, and then we talk about it, but it's like, that's the most relevant thing that people are going to know. It was all over the news most recently.
It's so frustrating because the entire fucking country was looking for her. And then this girl, her family could not even get the police to look for her. And also I think because of the cold, they probably weren't able to get a very accurate time of death. So, you know, that was probably a contributing factor as well. But, like, who knows? She could have been alive when they first realized she was missing.
But they took so long to let them be able to report her missing that is insane.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact amount of time was for this case. I couldn't find that. And in this case, I have even more questions than the Gabby Petito case. Because Gabby Petito, like, okay, it's domestic violence. Like, that happens. But this, like, what the hell happened to this girl?
You'd think they'd want to know more so they can prevent it from happening in the future.
It's just insane. And, like, so far, every case that I've heard about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls is just, like, mind-blowingly like this. You know, the police do nothing. They take forever to report them missing. Nobody seems to care. Everything seems really sketchy. And I'm just like, what is happening in our country that we're just okay with this happening?
Unfortunately, we're okay with a lot of things just happening, and people don't take the time unless they hear about it on major media.
Yeah. In Montana alone, there have been 33 missing people reported in the last year. And that's just in their missing persons database. I don't know what their criteria is for adding people to their missing persons database. And, like, almost... So I'm scrolling through it a little bit, and, like, all of these are, like, kids. Like, almost all of them have been under 25, most of them under 16 when they've gone missing. And most people don't even know about it. Did you have any idea that this was a problem?
I mean, yeah, but, like, not as big of a problem. I mean, where I am from, there's, like, a reservation, at least one of them that I know of.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so, like, for me, I grew up in Maryland, and I don't even think I knew any Native Americans other than, you know, like, that one douchebag in every class that's like, I'm, like, 150th Native American, and I'm like, no, you're white. Okay, go bye.
Most of the reservations, and we talked about this last time because you had no idea of what Michigan looked like, but most of the reservations are up in the Upper Peninsula.
Oh, okay.
Where there's more of a sparse population up there.
I don't know. It just... Crazy. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts?
I think that there's been injustice done for this person and that there can be more done. And I think that stands true for a lot of different cases. Like, we're gonna beat the horse to death about it. It's just... I personally think that there was some sort of abduction that took place. Whether it be trafficking, someone just picked her up, or whatever. And drugging. That's another thing that I would point it towards, too.
Okay, so they did release the autopsy report, but they still haven't released the toxicology report, which is weird to me.
What does the autopsy have to say?
I'm trying to find the actual copy of it. Right now I'm just seeing they released it, and I'm like, great, okay, can I see it, though?
So while Rachel is looking at that stuff, I just want to say that we're probably going to put some links in the description to give more information about her missing as well as other issues that are going on in our country with missing Indigenous women. There's a lot of issues with it, as we've mentioned multiple times, and if you know anything or know ways to help or if you can advocate in any way, even if it's just sharing the information, that would be great.
Hey guys, it's CJ from True Crime with Millennials. I just want to let you know that we appreciate you listening, and if you want to support us more, go ahead and leave us 5 stars anywhere that you can. You can also tip us on Anchor, you can find us on social media, on Instagram at True Crime with Millennials, and we just introduced merch, so be sure to check that out too. You can find that in the link in our Instagram bio. It's pretty great merch, and we are also taking listener requests. So if you're interested in sending in a case that you want to hear about, reach out to us through social media, or you can email us at truecrimewithmillennials@gmail.com. Be sure to check out our science podcast, which is Science with Millennials. We have new episodes of that on every Wednesday, and we cover a variety of topics. And then now True Crime with Millennials is going to be coming out on Mondays, so look forward to that. Back to the episode.
So the documentary that I was talking about is called Murdered and Missing in Montana, and I definitely recommend you try to watch it.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. But I also, like, this has a variety of different people on it, but there's different, like, Instagram accounts and stuff that you can follow. You can share, like, the information about them, but one of them we'll link also in the description, but we personally follow on our Instagram is missing_persons_in_the_USA. And they post all different, like, races and types of people and give information of where they're missing from, their age, pictures of them, and you can share them just to, like, try and spread the word a little bit, you know? But there's all kinds of those accounts all over Instagram. You just have to be certain of, like, the ones that you're following aren't just doing it for, like, attention. They're actually trying to, like, spread the word about missing people. Because I've noticed there's, like, a lot of, like, scam accounts, like, spam posting different missing people that their cases are either solved or, I don't know, they're just doing it for likes and attention. You have to be careful with that with anything, but, like, just be aware of, like, the information that you're spreading before you spread it, is what I'm saying. Just like with anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to try to request the case file or something since... But it's not technically a closed case because it's listed accidental. So it's... I don't know. Sometimes there'll be jerks about it. And I'm like, you're not even investigating this. Why do you care if I have this information? But anyway, I guess that's pretty much it. That's all the information I have on this case. It just, everything I read about it just gives me more questions.
I feel like that's the case with a lot of, like, cases that are undercover, you know? Like, even the ones that are covered extensively, there's still questions, but, like, especially with these ones, there's, like, little to no answers.
Yeah, I mean, this case has actually been covered a lot recently because of there's been a huge push and increase in the coverage of missing and murdered Indigenous women, and this is one of the most covered cases, which is good. I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all, but yeah, so, but every source just kind of repeats the same couple facts, you know? So.
That's what I'm saying, though. It gets covered, but at the same time, if it had been covered, like, when it happened.
Right. There might have been more information about it.
Right.
And another thing is, like, they were trying to get a reward together to hopefully encourage someone to come forward. That's the word I was looking for. I couldn't think of the word forward. And, you know, they just, like, the government wasn't helping at all. Meanwhile, like, a white girl goes missing and they're like, $100,000 to whoever gives us information that goes to find her. There you go.
And I'm not siding with the government when I say this, but I feel like their reasoning would be that they can't give money to, like, everyone for a reward, but at the same time, they can. And why do they only pick and choose who they're going to do it for?
Well, that's the point. Like, I get that they're like, well, we can't just give out money all the time. And I'm like, well, first of all, you probably could, but second of all, like, okay, then stop giving it to only white people. Like, I don't know. It's just so ridiculous.
Do better.
I think I'm just saying the same five things over and over again now, so I guess it's time to end this episode.
Takeaways from this episode.
Takeaways that you should take it upon yourself to educate yourself about what's going on around you, and what minority groups you can help. Because if you're in a position of privilege, you should be reaching out to help people who aren't and bring awareness to their cases.
Like I said, even if it's something as simple as using your social media to spread the word.
Right.
That's how things get out. You know, especially if you get the attention of, like, celebrities.
Right, for sure.
They can get the word out to a massive amount of people.
Which, it drives me bananas that celebrities choose to not interact with stuff like this as much as they should.
I think it's funny that you just said it drives me bananas.
Why?
Because I say that literally all the time.
Oh. But yeah, I mean, it does. It, like, especially when there's a big issue, or, like, you know, for example, when this past summer when all of the protests and stuff were happening all over the place for, you know, black people being murdered by the cops. And, like, when influencers or celebrities decided to just not say anything about it, I'm like, why?
Like, it's, I mean, I guess it's kind of a political stance, but, like, at the same time.
For example, one of the ones that bugged me the most is that, like, Instagram for the dog Tucker, the golden retriever, his, like, owner, I guess, was like, oh, well, you know, we don't, this is supposed to be a positive place, and we don't talk about anything not positive on here. And I'm like, okay, but you have this huge audience and you're like intentionally avoiding this thing that you could do because you're worried people are going to be pissed off at you.
Yeah, they're probably also like I was saying that because they don't believe in it or they don't support it.
Right.
So like, we're not going to take a stance either way because then, you know, both sides of the audience are going to come after us no matter what we say.
Right.
Which I think that, you know, if you have something negative to say, don't share it. But the positive thing is sharing the word and, like, getting it out there that Black Lives Matter. So, like, why wouldn't you want to stand on that side of the fence instead of just saying, oh, either way, we don't.
Well, when, because, like, when we started this podcast, I was like, that's never how I'm going to be. I have, first of all, I have no off button. I don't know if that's autism or Aries or both, but, you know, when I'm fired up about something, I, like, let everybody know. And secondly, because what's the point of, like, if you, we obviously, like, support Black Lives Matter, like, as much as possible, as much as our two disabled asses can. If you are against that, or are against the things that we say, then don't listen to our fucking podcast. Bye, Felicia. Go listen to Joe Rogan or some shit. I don't know.
Oh, please do not promote with him. Oh my gosh. Don't even get me started. Do not listen to him.
Don't. No.
People are literally boycotting Spotify right now because they won't take him off.
I know,
they won't,
I know.
Take him off of there.
Yeah,
I'm just going to keep raging if we you bring up his name again. I just, like, it's like people like him that, like, spread that misinformation. Or I saw, like, a TikToker I follow. Her name is Jazz Thornton. She's from, I believe it's Australia. But she was, like, in quarantine for, like, 10 days or something. And I was watching her, this is off topic, I was watching her videos because she would get meals delivered 3 times a day. And she'd get, like, really excited about it and, like, do an unboxing and, like, that kind of stuff. But she was just doing that and then talking, like, about her experience and, like, how she had to get, like, a special wristband to be able to go outside because they had to do it in certain amounts of time. But then some rando, I don't know what political stance he took. I'm assuming more right wing, but he turned it into saying that she was in, like, a concentration camp for COVID or
what?
Whatever. And yeah, oh, it's insane. God. I'll have to show it to you. But she was like, no, it's just, like, safety precautions. And she was like, and you're spewing out that you are only telling facts and, like, saying the truth and stuff. But it's not, like, you're not saying the truth. You didn't even, like, hear me out and hear me say that this is because we have to be out a certain amount of time. Because he was saying, oh, she's so excited about being able to be let outside. Why is she being kept? And it's like, that's just their restrictions for COVID, you know.
If,
like,
I saw another fucking person do a fucking TikTok of them fake sticking keys to their forehead because they were magnetic now, I was gonna lose my mind.
Right. It's just like, that's tying it back to what we're talking about, though. It's like, people like that just take a small amount of information and then make it into this huge thing, and they have a huge following, and they, you know, essentially are just spreading all this misinformation, and those people believe them because they're like, this
person
is someone I should listen to.
Yeah, this person must know what they're talking about. And I feel like that just is overly true nowadays with like how big podcasts are becoming, because people are like, oh, well, these people have a podcast, that's official, they probably know what they're talking about. But like, anyone can start a podcast, my dudes.
Like us.
Yeah.
I mean, we sort of know what we're
talking about, but like.
Yeah.
But like, we're not giving you like advice on how to live your life other than, you know, I don't know.
We're also not saying this is 100% factual, or like this is our speculation, or this is our belief, or, you know, and like you say all the time, take it with a grain of salt. And it's like, it's not, these are definite facts and this is exactly what happened and all of this stuff. Like, I know that I'm not going to say his name again, but, you know, someone likes to try and say that and skew his opinions towards like what the general population should believe. And like, I've seen bits and pieces of his stuff.
I will say, we're not going to tell you what to think, but if your response to Black Lives Matter is All Lives Matter, please exit this podcast immediately and don't come back.
Exit stage left, and we never
want
to.
I don't care that I'm alienating people. I don't want you to listen to our podcast, because I know that you're just going to bitch about it on the internet, and I'm going to bitch right back at you and be like, guess what, dumbass?
Yeah, Rachel's our guard dog of the podcast.
I may be shy AF in person, but on the internet I will take you down, motherfucker.
And I'm the opposite.
I've been dealing with trolls on the internet for so fucking long, guys. You really think you can do shit to me?
I don't know. I feel like we have a pretty good follower base.
Yeah, we do. You guys are great. Yeah,
we appreciate
it. I mean, I've been streaming on Twitch since 2015, and then prior to that, you know, I played online video games and everything. So I've been being trolled on the internet for a very long time, my friends. You gotta wake up pretty early in the morning to get something past me. I sounded 80, didn't I?
Yeah.
Good. All right, well, let's wrap this episode up then, I guess. Thank you guys for hanging out and listening to this episode of True Crime with Millennials. Definitely share with your friends, or your not friends, or anyone. This is super important to discuss. And, you know, if you have any feedback or thoughts or any cases you would like us to talk about, we'd be happy to do that. You can email us at truecrimewithmillennials@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram at truecrimewithmillennials.com. Just truecrimewithmillennials. Yeah. I'm really bad at saying our social media stuff.
I think you did a great job.
Thanks. All right. We'll catch you next week, guys. And everybody else.
Ta-ta for now.
Bye.